Join Sam and Will as they bring the Bible's stories to life through historical evidence and try not to feel out of place in a car garage, all while bringing you Under the Hood.
Welcome to Under the Hood. I'm your host, Will. I'm here alongside Sam. Sam, what are we talking about today?
So today we're going to be talking about one of those questions that skeptics have, and even people with questions about the Bible, all of us should have, which is, if there was a flood that was worldwide and it was every bit as bad as the Bible says, would there even be enough water on planet Earth to make that happen?
That's interesting, because I've never thought of it until you asked about it. I'm like, oh, I've never thought about that, but that makes sense. Like, where did all this water come from? Because it must have been an extraordinary amount.
Yeah, it had to be. Like, the way that the Bible describes it is, you know, for sure, at least in Noah's region, the mountains are covered. Like, there's no land emerging. There's no plant life. Like, the world is submerged. And so one of the things that comes out of that is you'll get people that are well-intentioned or skeptical that'll come back and say, okay, wait a minute. If all the water on planet Earth was used to flood the entire Earth, you still have problems. So let's like walk through the amounts of water supplies that you find from different things. You think that'd be helpful?
Yeah.
All right. So let's go to the U.S. Geological Survey, which is a government organization. They said if all the water in the atmosphere rained down at once, it would only cover the globe to a depth of, got a guess?
I would think 15 feet.
Nope. 2.5 centimeters.
A lot different.
So an inch. So if all water, all in the clouds, all at once fell down, we've got about an inch.
Okay.
Which now you're thinking like, well, that's not covering mountains.
Yeah, you know? Not even covering my foot practically.
Right. Like there's going to be places where it all congregates and it would be a terrible, violent flood. But we're not talking about a global flood here. So now let's go to NASA. What if all of the glaciers and everything else and the ice caps and Antarctica and everything, all of it melted, what would happen? This is from NASA. Quote, if all glaciers and ice sheets melted, the global sea level would rise by more than 195 feet or 60 meters. Well, that's a significant flood. That would be very bad. Like, we're in Florida. It's goodbye, Florida, right? Like, we don't have hills. Like, we're barely above sea level where we're standing right now. But 195 feet is still not covering mountains, right? Like, so all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute. So, all right, that's all the rain from all the clouds and all the ice caps and glaciers and everything else. Like, we're at 195 feet and 1 inch.
You know? And that's all the water I know.
So where do we go next? Next is, okay, this is from the American Geophysical Union, and they say that there's approximately, this is where we have to go. There's approximately 43.9 million cubic kilometers, or 10.5 million cubic miles of water in the Earth's crust.
Okay.
So now, like, now that's a significant amount of water where we're starting to get, like, even more significant flooding. That you think of, like, the Florida aquifer that's under our feet. There's huge resources of water that are under our feet in the crust that happens all over the world, all the wells, you know, that you drill down into the crust and you're getting water that comes up. If all that water came up, you'd add a significant amount, but it's still not enough. And so one of the things that people ran into this problem is they said, okay, well, the Bible talks about a flood that would require water that is like tremendously high. And if all of the rain and all of the ice caps and all the glaciers and Antarctica and the wells and springs and everything else, it still doesn't cover it. And everybody for a long time thought, well, God must have
just produced it.
Ex nihilo, he spoke it into existence. And I'd be good with that.
Like,
I'm fine with that. I believe in a supernatural God. Like, and I understand that if you don't believe in a supernatural God and you're only a materialist, that position sounds crazy. But I believe in a supernatural God, right? I recognize that in and of itself that would seem crazy. But I believe in a God that defies that. Well, in 2014, prior to 2014, scientists believed that all of the water on Earth was supplied to the Earth by icy comets that had crashed and impacted the Earth. Like, where did it come from? It's these icy comets that are smashing in and then melting down. And that's where at least a significant portion of the water, they believe, came from. It's like, where did we get all this? Which, that seems crazy to me.
Yeah, as you said that, I was like, really? That's our best guess?
Right. But I read it the same way. But in 2014, scientists discovered a massive amount of water that's trapped down in the mantle layer. So you have the crust, right? And right underneath the crust, you have the upper mantle layer. And down there, so we're talking a few hundred miles beneath our feet, is this stuff called ringwoodite. And ringwoodite, it looks like a blue crystal. And the reason why it's blue is it absorbs water. And down there where you've got all this movement and heat and everything else that's, you know, down in the mantle layer and the crust, all the plate tectonics, it serves as kind of shock absorbers. And it cools down. It's got water that can be released with high pressure and density and everything else. And it works as like this miraculously designed thing that the Earth is, where God put that down there. But what happens is if you crush that or you put tremendous pressure or heat on it, it will expel water. And so the question is, okay, how much is there in this stuff? And scientists now estimate that this reservoir and the mantle layer of all of this ringwoodite contains up to 1 billion cubic miles of water. So remember what we were saying? If we go back to all the stuff that's in the crust, we get 10.5 million cubic miles of water. They're saying it's up to 1 billion cubic miles of water that's down in the mantle layer, which is more than enough to have this cataclysmic flood that covers the whole Earth. And so, but how does that happen? You know, how does the entire Earth have some kind of event where it puts the dew pressure and heat that would expel that out? Because you know how the Bible describes the flood. It doesn't say it rained really hard and the earth flooded. If you look at it in Genesis 7, verse 11, it says, all the springs of the great deep burst forth, and the floodgates of the heavens were opened. And so the idea there, what God is describing, is in creation, he separated the waters to the skies and he separated the waters into the seas. This is saying that the waters of the heavens are coming down and the waters of the deep are coming up. And in a sense, God is reversing creation. He's bringing a judgment on the world. But notice what he gives priority to. All the springs of the what? The great deep burst forth. And so even in the way that Genesis is written, what gets priority? Because if you and I, if I'm talking to you about a flood, what are you assuming just happened?
Rained.
The Bible says no. This was such a tremendous flood of such a great magnitude, rains won't cut it. The springs of the great deep burst forth. And sure enough, wouldn't you know that unless God created water out of nothing, where would the water had to have come from? From the great deep. From the crust, from the mantle. That's the only way that you get enough water that could cover the mountains, theoretically. So there's a lot of people, and well-intentioned, and this isn't a hill that I die on. It's not a salvation issue, but I believe in a worldwide flood because I think that's what the Bible communicates. There's some people who argue that this was a regional flood. And in Noah's day, by the way, the Tower of Babel hasn't happened. People haven't been scattered all over. So their whole world really is just one little region where, you know, the mountains there are much, much different than the mountains that you're going to find in the Andes or in Everest or, you know, other places. But there's a guy named Cesare Emiliani, who's a professor of geology at the University of Miami. And he did studies in the Gulf of Mexico. And listen to what he says. He says, we know that there was a worldwide flood. This is what he's arguing, that there's this massive infusion of fresh water that just inundates the Gulf of Mexico. Well, that's interesting because the Gulf of Mexico is connected to the Atlantic Ocean, which is connected to the Pacific Ocean, which is connected to the Indian Ocean. They're all interconnected. And so if you have this massive surge into the Gulf of Mexico of fresh water, guess where else has massive infusions of fresh water?
Everywhere
else. And so listen to what he says. He says, we know this because the oxygen isotope ratios, you know those, right, of the foraminifera shells showed a marked temporary decrease in the salinity of the waters of the Gulf of Mexico. So you go back to this particular period thousands of years ago, and all of the fossil record shows that suddenly there's this massive infusion of fresh water that you find in the Gulf of Mexico that radically changes the salinity levels. And he's like, that the only way that I know how to describe what's going on there is by a great flood that would have overwhelmed the Gulf of Mexico, which is connected to all the oceans, with fresh water. And so what's his conclusion? This is what he says. There is no question that there was a flood, and there is also no question that it was a universal flood. And so, again, we look at the springs of the great deep had to burst forth. Something's going on, because it's not like the Gulf of Mexico is not near the ice caps. So even melting there, why would it be so pronounced that far south, that far north from the South Pole, that far south from the North Pole, in a fairly tropical region? You see this surge of fresh water. Where's it coming from? And the only way that you can think is it had to have happened everywhere. And that's his conclusion. Another thing that's just kind of interesting is, and this would for sure at least confirm that the region of Noah was flooded. Back in 1999, there's a guy by the name of Dr. Robert Ballard. He's known as like the underwater, he's an underwater archaeologist. He found the Titanic, he found the Bismarck, he found the USS Yorktown. He's very famous. He's kind of seen as like the underwater Indiana Jones. And he took a submersible because he went with a theory that came out of the Ivy Leagues that said, we think that there was a flood that was so significant that it overwhelmed the Black Sea and turned the Black Sea from fresh water, being an isolated lake, to where the seas rose and inundated it with all of its salt water. So the Mediterranean flooded into the Black Sea and turned the Black Sea salt water. So he sent Hercules, his underwater submersible, to go down on the floor of the Black Sea. And in 1999, listen to this, he discovered a shoreline that was 550 feet underwater.
Okay.
And all of the fossils that dated 7,000 years or older were all freshwater. They were all freshwater species. All of the species and fossils that came after that were salt. And as they're looking around 311 feet below sea level, you find the wattle and daub structure, the corners of buildings. You find tools, ceramic, stone tools of a hammer and an axe. And so here you see evidence. Now, what's interesting about that is the Black Sea. Do you know what mountain is right next to the Black Sea? Mount Ararat. Does that ring a bell?
Where people believe Noah's Ark landed.
That's where the Bible says that Noah's Ark came to rest, on top of Mount Ararat. So we know that several thousand years ago, the Black Sea was so overwhelmed with floodwaters that it actually transitioned from freshwater to saltwater, and all of that water inundated it. The only explanation is a great massive flood. And right next to that sea is Mount Ararat, where Noah's Ark comes to rest. So you see there more evidence for certain in the region that there was a great flood of Noah's time period.
Yeah, it's questions like this that kind of make the Bible stories come to life. Because when you think about the flood, most people, just like you said earlier, like, oh, it was rain. I mean, it was a lot of rain. But as you start to think, okay, now waters are bursting forth from the ground. Now this is a universal flood that's covering mountain ranges. You see just like, oh no, this was a real cataclysmic event that destroyed everything but that what was in the ark.
Mm-hmm. And the Bible gives hints of that, that it's not just like, oh, the water levels are rising. Look, kids, you know, like it's saying, no, you need to get the birds inside because the atmosphere that's outside of the ark, it's not just chaotic waters, it's chaotic skies. Something's going on that is changing everything. The only way that you live is to be inside the ark. Birds can't just go float around on the waves and you know, wait around for the flood to be over. No, they need a sanctuary too, because whatever's going on during this flood is violent everywhere.
So when you get down to it, as you start to look at the water that could have been used during the flood, there really is enough for a universal flood like Noah's to happen.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is all speculation. We're not scientists, and you're not looking at underwater geology and all that stuff. But what we're saying is God said that he did it. We believe in the supernatural. So if he wanted to do it, he could have done it through the creation of water out of nowhere. But in addition to that, what we're saying is the resources to bring about a worldwide flood are on planet Earth. So for decades, the claim of the skeptics was there's not enough water. We now know, since 2014, we know definitively, yes, there is. And so again, we can take our Bible at face value, you know, and believe what it says. And the more we learn about our creation, the more the Bible holds up to scrutiny. And so I want to thank you for watching. Join us next time as we go under the hood of another story in the Bible.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. We'd love you checked out some other content we have. You can find that at sunlitstudios.com.